Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. This is the Inner Voice Show, a heartfelt chat with me, Fujian. I'm Dr. Fujian Zane, and with a hello to Sean in the studio and a big hello to all of you. This is a show about what matters most in our life, our minds, our thoughts, our feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. So in this show, I'll bring you the latest research about people who feel enthusiastic and cheerful. What psychologists really call like a positive affect, are less likely to experience memory decline as they age. So this result adds to a growing body of research on positive affects and role in aging. I also bring you Kim Chesney, a globally recognized innovation leader, the founder of Intuition Lab, and the author of Radical Intuition. We will be talking about ways to develop your listening to your intuition, to what's going on in here in your gut. Then I'll bring you Robert Moss. He's the author of Growing Big Dreams, Manifesting Your Heart's Desire Through 12 Secrets of Imagination. We will be talking about ways to connect with your inner imagineer and become the scriptwriter, director, and the star of your own life movies, choosing your preferred genre and stepping into a bigger and braver story. I'd love to hear from you. Connect with me through my website, fujian.com, and follow my social media and message me with your comments and topics of interest or people you want me to bring and chat with. But first, here's the tip of the week. This week has been a week of anticipation for most of us. So I'm pretty much continuing, right? So I began exploring how we handle the feeling of anticipation. Anticipation is a feeling of excitement, a longing, a yearning, a waiting eagerly for something you know that's going to happen. If we project that the expected event is positive, then the excitement will ride with pleasure. If our projection is for a dangerous or a negative event, then a feeling of anxiety and fear is experienced. Anxiety is actually anticipation for some negative event to happen. So we project the worst case scenario to the future, resist it happening, and then scare ourselves with all of the negative consequences that might happen. I've worked with people who have anticipation for their exams, board exams, speaking in front of others, even their own wedding, of course, a great party, kids who have anticipation for their presents and their birthdays or Christmas, any positive event that is coming up, which they're eager to make it perfect and shine. I also have worked with others who have anticipated their abuser to open the door to come in and harm them sexually or physically, for a loved one in their last stages of life to pass on, for a judge's verdicts on their crime or any event that they know will create pain for them. Parents to find out about what they've done, like the kids, they've done something and they're waiting for the parents to punish them, or getting fired or laid off. I remember working with a client who was quitting smoking, and through hypnosis, she released all the anticipation she had felt every afternoon, hearing the guy who was going to molest her walking up the stairs into her room. She realized it, and then she picked up a cigarette every time she felt that anticipation that showed up again, kind of like to soothe herself. As she healed that trauma, she was able to let go of the smoking, actually, easier. So how can we handle anticipation? First of all, identify the feeling of anticipation and assess it if it's toward a positive event or a negative one. If it's positive, then begin visualizing yourself in the midst of experiencing the positivity and begin your enjoyment, or you may distract yourself with another event or action until the time arrives. Like, we're waiting for a great gift because we know our parents or our mate or somebody's going to give it to us. Or we're anticipating to go to this wonderful vacation or something that's going to, or we got a job and we're just kind of like anticipating to get there. So in the meantime, keep visualizing, or if you're done with visualization, kind of like, you know, distract yourself until the time shows up. If negative, then begin visualizing what might go wrong and then how you will handle it or survive it based on your skills and strength, right? Based on what you already know and how you can handle it. Do a little bit of a reality check to minimize your fear and tone down your imagination to what actually could happen versus all the negative possibilities that are imaginable but unlikely to actually occur. If anticipating an abuse, plan for your safety, get support, or leaving the premise so that you can find solutions and become empowered to move to a safer environment. If you have been traumatized by event, which now the anticipation of a similar events are kind of like ingrained in your psyche, please get help and heal your trauma, because you don't need to live with that type of anticipation throughout your life. You can go to my book, Life Reset, The Awareness Integration Path, to living the life that you want and receive guidance through easy steps in how to handle your anticipation in all areas of life. And may you enjoy the excitement of the greatness of life and be powerful in the faces of all that life brings. So now let me share with you the latest research. We may wish some memories could last a lifetime, but many physical and emotional factors can negatively impact our ability to retain information throughout life. A new study published in the Journal of Psychological Science found that people who feel enthusiastic and cheerful, what psychologists call positive affect, are less likely to experience memory decline as they age. Good news, right? This result adds to a growing body of research on positive affect's role in healthy aging. A team of researchers analyzed data from 991 middle-aged and older U.S. adults who participated in a national study conducted at three times period between 1995 and 96, 2004 and 2006, and 2013 and 2014. The researchers examined the association between positive affect and memory decline, accounting for age, for gender, education, depression, negative affect, and extroversion. Their findings show that memory declined with age. However, individuals with high levels of positive affect had a less steep memory decline over the course of almost a decade. Wow. That's good news. So let's get prepared for positive thinking, positive emotion, because obviously we're going to age better. So don't go anywhere. We're coming back with Kim Chesney and Radical Intuition.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Again, I am here with Kim Chesney. She is the author of Radical Intuition. A globally recognized innovation leader and a founder of Intuition Lab. We'll talk about what an Intuition Lab is. Her work has been featured or supported by leading edge organizations, including SXSW Interactive, Carnegie Mellon University, Comcast, Hewlett-Packard, and you can definitely know more about her at kimchesney.com. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to talk with you today.
Thank you. It's exciting to talk about intuition because I think that we have a lot of myths about intuition. And sometimes we hear, you know, there's a knowing, there's something, and then we're like, well, is that my intuition? Is this just my wishes? Is this something I'm making up? Is this real? Is this not? Is this information like accurate? So I think we have a lot of confusion about what intuition is. And I know that in your book, you explain what intuition is and what's not. And you actually talk about four types of intuition. So share with us.
All right. Well, I mean, and I love that you brought this up because one of the very first things, you know, we deal with when we're talking about intuition is really helping people understand what it really is. Because, you know, I love what you mentioned about, oh, is it a feeling or is it a knowing or is it a gut reaction or is it something psychic and mystical, right? So we have all these different, you know, conceptions about intuition. So one of my goals with this book was really to wrap it all up into one comprehensive understanding so that we can understand how all those knowings and feelings and all of the different ways that we experience intuition work together very naturally in our cognitive sensibilities. You know, I really look at it as intuition is just the complement to our intellect in terms of information processing. It's very matter of fact. It's a natural part of our cognitive function that every single person who's ever lived and ever will live has. It's totally normal. It's just something that we haven't, I wouldn't say figured out how to use yet, but maybe we just stopped using and kind of forgot how to use. Because it really is part of our natural being and the way that we live and understand and process information in the world.
Definitely, I agree with you where we've lost the capacity to utilize it. Because I think, you know, when you work with children, you really get that there's something within it, within them that has that type of a knowing. But I think we lose it because we keep questioning and then we go in the world and somehow we got to constantly reality check with the world. And when we reality check with the world, somehow we lose the check with ourselves. So first, let's define it, if you can. If you could say, what is it that I know that you talked about four types of intuition. So if you want to share what four types are. And then share with us, like, how can we develop that connection again that maybe that we lost?
Right. Yeah. Great. So really in the book, I talk about sort of an overarching definition of intuition being that intuition is an illuminating insight that comes to us in the form of a thought, a feeling, a physical sensation, or an experience that we simply receive. Right. And the simply receive part is really important with intuition because it's not like our intellectual learning where we have to go and get a PhD and figure it out and solve problems. Intuition is instantaneous. It's that flash of insight, that epiphany, that instant knowing, that instant feeling. So in a lot of ways, it's much easier to use our intuition because it all we have to do is open up to receive it. And if we're open to it, bam, it just comes like that. So it's so much easier for us to connect with. The trick is opening up to connect with it and then understanding, you know, what it's saying, because it speaks to us differently. It's not a linear process. It doesn't use the side of our brain that processes language and understanding in a linear fashion. It, you know, it communicates with us in terms of senses and feelings and metaphors and all of these different things that are aligned more with the creative side of our brain, the intuitive side of our brain. So it's learning our individual languages, each of us, that helps us to develop our intuition. And that's where these four sort of types of intuition come in. So there's not actually four different types. They're really just four pathways of the one overarching process of intuition that we all have. So, you know, a lot of people have different definitions per se of intuition. One of the ones that I like is Paramahansa Yogananda says that intuition is the soul's power of knowing God. Now that is, you know, whatever word you use for God, source, universe, the cloud of information that pervades everything. Our intuition is our connection to that higher wisdom and awareness and information that our mind just can't get to. For whatever reason, our rational linear mind can't get to that level of insight. So we rely on this sort of genius, this sort of higher awareness to dip down and give us this information. So with the four types of intuitions, we're looking at four different pathways that information flows to us. So understanding these four pathways started really with modeling after the Jungian four types of cognitive functions, right? So you've probably heard of the Myers-Briggs test and, you know, all of that sort of based on the same concept of sensory input and intellectual input and emotional input and the sort of input from the universe and our higher awareness. So thinking of it in terms of body, mind, heart, and spirit really is a simple understanding of the four pathways of intuition. It speaks to us through our bodies and our physical sensations. It speaks to us with our minds, with our thoughts and decisions and knowings. It speaks to us with our heart, with our feelings and the way we're moved and called to serve in the world. And then ultimately the most profound aspect of intuition is the way that we connect with the divine, the sacred, the eternal part of our nature that's really mystical and elusive and really takes us out beyond into the mystery.
There's two things I'm hearing from you. So from the like the scientific world or the neuropsychological world, many times they've explained intuitive aspect from the four aspects, the types that you, mediums that you talked about, that we are getting a lot of information all at the same time through all of our senses, and our cognition is not able to process everything consciously, awareingly, like only have capacity to be aware of so many information that is being processed. But that doesn't mean that all of those are not being taken in anyway. Mm-hmm. And that intuitive voice is sometimes when all of that in the background has been taken from the world and it's there. And, you know, it's processing the way our inner world processes in a subconscious level. And then, although we're doing this cognitive processing, that those are also information that shows up from our subconscious that adds to it. And then, so I was kind of hearing that from you, but I was also hearing the additional piece, which is, it isn't just about the information I'm receiving from here, but it's also tapping to an information and a wisdom and a knowing that is beyond just us as a human being. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So our intuition knows everything. And that's the thing. If you think about the world in terms of data, even the way that we look at it with computers, everything in the world is a collection of information. And like the cloud, like we upload our files to the cloud and we have this cloud that we can all access with the internet, like the cloud, or that some people call the Akashic Records, you know, if you want to look at a more spiritual side of things, all of that information and data is out there. And our intuition is just that part of our consciousness or our super consciousness, our higher consciousness, that can access all of that stuff that's a little bit further than our mind can. Like our mind is capable of responding to everything that's around us, right? In this space and time, everything that we meet face to face. But our intuition can go beyond that. And that's why it's so valuable. And it was valuable to our ancestors who used, you know, instincts with hunting and all of these different things and migration and all the things that, you know, the mind couldn't figure out. We relied on intuition to touch those places and those rhythms that were beyond our day-to-day experience. And somehow, you know, I like that you mentioned earlier about children because, you know, as children, we're very intuitive. We come into the world so intuitive and with brilliant, vibrant imaginations. And gradually life kind of hammers that out of us because we're taught to believe what's real and what's logical and that we're not so sure about the rest of that other stuff, right? We sort of should have been going to school to develop our intuitive side too. You know, we should have been developing both sides, but we've been over-focused on the one side of our brain and this conscious sort of rational development of knowledge when it would imagine how smart we'd all be today if we had been developing both sides of our brains all along.
Very much. So you also share about how to develop that part of us, which is listening back into it through mindfulness, through insightfulness, through shutting it down the world through the other senses and kind of going within and listening and kind of getting reconnected from that part. Can you share some ways of having the ability to do that?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I first say with folks who are interested in reconnecting to that inner voice and that inner knowing is, you know, to hear your intuition, you have to have some space between your thoughts. And that sounds easy, but today in our lifestyles, we're on our hamster wheels and we're running around, we got our phones, we're constantly doing and caught up in our technology. And so as long as our minds are racing, our intuition has a very limited space to come through to us. So the key, one of the very first keys in starting to become more intuitive and opening up to your intuition is making more space between your thoughts, spending more time with yourself. You know, you always hear about artists being so intuitive and creative people being so intuitive. And one of the reasons for that is because they spend a lot of time alone. Most artists have to be alone to create, you know, when you're working and you're writing songs or creating art or music or whatever you're doing, you're spending time with yourself, right? So getting into a habit of spending a little more time with yourself, whether it's going for a walk or taking a bath or, you know, whatever self-care rituals that you have that kind of allow you to quiet your mind and open up that space. Meditation is wonderful. It's a wonderful practice, but I know it's hard for people to really take the time to do that. But even if you take a little bit of time in the morning when you're getting ready in the shower, just to clear your head and open up, these can be really fertile times where your intuition starts to kind of come in little blips and drops. And most of us have felt that. We've been in the shower and be like, oh my gosh, I just had this idea, this really cool thing I didn't think of. Or right when you wake up in the morning before your mind starts carrying you away, you just have this cool idea. You have this solution to a problem that you were working with. And, you know, Einstein talked a lot about that and those sort of genius epiphanies that you get when you just let your mind get out of the way for a little bit. So it really is a practice of controlling our minds and a lot, creating a place for our minds in our life. And that's why mindfulness is so important. And, you know, the work from The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle and this whole process of being still and moving into the moment and in the quiet is really foundational for this culture of insightfulness, which I'm kind of shouting from the rooftops now. It's first we become mindful. Now it's time to start becoming insightful. It's open up to that space. And there in the stillness, your intuition speaks. You know, what is it going to say to you? How is it calling you to go out and serve in the world or change your life for the better or help other people, right? So that's where the shift is starting to happen into going into that space and then listening to the guidance that comes from it.
Is that the way you you share that this your approach is that your society is going through an intuitive revolution?
Yes. So that's part of it. And really the revolution idea for me, and it's so funny because I've been talking about this for about 10 years. I've just had this idea of this intuition revolution that we're going through, and having the book coming out on election day and going through all this political stuff, it's been so timely and it's been really strangely aligned with the work of this book, which really started from my journey in technology. So when I wrote my first book it was a little over 10 years ago, The Psychic Workshop, I really focused more on the spiritual side of intuition, right? That was sort of my pathway into it, really working with that spiritual understanding and, you know, something that as an intuitive person, I was always drawn to. But then working in technology, I noticed something started to happen about 10 years ago. People started talking about intuition. Like I got to work with some of the biggest technology companies in the world and some of the smartest, most genius people. And all of a sudden I hear them talking about intuition. And like, my mind's like, wow, finally my worlds are coming together. And that's when I started to realize it's not just, you know, intuition made its debut maybe in the 60s and 70s. We really started talking about it. It really started to become popular as a source of personal transformation and development. And you know, it got people's attention, but it wasn't finished. That was just the beginning, because now we're in this space where people are realizing that intuition is more than just personal development. It's about changing the world. It's about innovating. It's about creating new products. I mean, look at Steve Jobs. He was one of the biggest advocates for intuition, and he created one of the most important companies in this world. So it's that spirit of change and transformation and positive growth in our culture and our world that is really the outcome of this intuition revolution.
So when you're talking about intuition and just to come up with some practical tools for our audience, my own sense of intuition has been that when I am quiet down, there's a knowing that shows up for me. I'm not necessarily like, I'm a very visual person. Sometimes the knowing shows up in words and sometimes it shows up in like visions, like a visual context that I have. And It almost gives this feeling of it's the right thing for me, not it's the right thing for others, but it's the right thing for me. And it's information where, such as, you know, I ask a question of myself in what to do or make a decision, and then I'll just kind of like let the question be. And it's almost like a response comes through me where it's like, okay, that's the right thing for me based on whatever it is that I'm asking for. So if you were going to define the experience of intuition, listening to it, grasping it, reconnecting with it, what would some types of experiences be like? So for audience who are listening, so they know what we're talking about in a sense.
Yeah, well, first of all, I love that you said that it is this unique experience just for you, because, you know, when you're reading the book, I'm sure you've seen that that's one of the cornerstones, is that all of us have different intuitions. And that's why you can't just go out and read a book on general intuition and make yours work, because your intuition speaks to you uniquely, right? And it'll talk to you in the language that you know based on your whole life experience. So getting to, first of all, understanding that is important. So, because people don't understand, well, like, why? I'll get a symbol and it'll be like, you know, something from a memory of mine that'll remind me of something. But like, how is that anything? Because it's so personal to me. But that's just the magic of it, that your intuition will use and draw on all of your own experiences and symbolisms and understanding in your own life to convey these messages through you. And they can come in the form of a knowing. They can come in the form of a feeling. Like, you know, sometimes you just know something and you don't know why. You meet someone and you just like don't have a good sense of them. You think, even though they check up all the boxes, they're, you know, they might be attractive or have a lot of money or have a good job, but then there's just a part of you that knows something's not right, you know? So that's your spidey senses. All that stuff is your intuition, because remember, your intuition knows everything and knows everything about that person. And it may know that that person is not a good person for you to be around. It might take you a little time to figure it out rationally, but your intuition will go there first. So that old saying, first impressions never lie, is really important as we go through life, right? We can use it in a whole array of different things. So that's one way, that sort of first impression, that instant knowing, is something to really pay attention to when you start to work with your intuition and honor that, because you can save yourself a lot of trouble if you listen to that. But the other thing is this idea of resonance. So we talk about, you know, going with your gut and, you know, following your truth and living your truth and your calling and all of these things that are associated with intuition. And this sort of comes down to this idea of resonance. So one of the ways that your intuition calls you forward and moves you to do things in your life is through feeling right. Like you said, it just feels right. And at the end of the day, we know that even though we might have a pros and cons list and go through all of the formulas to get the answer, we're going to do at the end of the day what feels right. And that's where intuition comes in, is saying, okay, this is alignment. So what feels right for us is what's going to be aligned with us, with our growth, with our positive evolution in life, right? And otherwise, you know, if something feels more dissonant and we're forcing ourselves to do it, or we feel pressured to do it by other people or society, then we're going against our truth and we're not living our truth. And that's how we end up sort of not fulfilling our potential or getting on the wrong path or getting into those ruts where we get stuck. Because being stuck, I talk about that in the book, is actually a good thing, because it's like the universe's way of like stopping you from going down the wrong path. It's like, okay, you're stuck. It's time to back up and course correct. And no matter what happens, your intuition is always there to draw you back. You just have to listen to those resonant feelings to take you back on the right path.
Many of us have, I've had a lot of experience, and I know a lot of my clients have had the experience where, you know, they go on dating or they get an offer for a job or they started with a business or something. And it seems like everything out there on a cognitive level, check marks, yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes. But then something inside says no. Mm-hmm. But because all the cognition one check marks there's a good deal of money in it, or they look at what's my benefit, they go in and then suddenly something happens which it doesn't work out. And many of them are like, you know, I should have known from the beginning, I had this feeling, or this was some, you know, a voice was nudging me from inside, like, don't do it, don't do it. Yep. And I said, no, you know, I'm gonna go through it because these are all the benefits, and I did the pros and the cons, and it all looked like it was good on paper. And then it told me. So one of the things I actually do tell my clients, which is definitely write a pros and cons. Mm-hmm. Go through all of your cognitive, you know, yes. assessment that you need to do, reality check almost, everything that you need to do. And then, you know, do a scan of it also with, like, you know, a gut feeling, and listen to yourself with all of that. Do I still, as my intuitive sense also says, go for it, or says no? Because if it says no, that part of you should have as much value as the other parts also. But sometimes it's more like, okay, people take that intuitive aspect and they don't do reality check. So they stay with their own cognitive, imagination. But the other part of that I also hearing from you is, in order for our imagination to work, our creativity to have a space, it's when we hear that part of us and then allow that part of us also to grow, because the creative part of us shows up through that intuitive aspect. Was that what I also got from you?
Yeah, absolutely. Creativity is one of the most powerful and tangible aspects of intuition, because creativity is when intuition actually manifests in the world. We create something, and that's all, you know, you hear artists and poets or writers talk about, oh, those words just flowed right through me, or the art, the painting just came out of me, right? Sometimes even when I wrote the book, I'd write whole chapters and I like totally forgot what I wrote, because I was just like, it was just writing itself, you know? So that's really a flow process, that this intuition comes out through creativity. So it's so powerful, and it's so important to honor that. And it really is. And I also want to acknowledge what you said earlier about people who get like so caught up in their imagination that they're not grounded at all rationally. And so that's why it's so important, you know, and I don't want anyone to think that I'm saying that intuition is better than the intellect, or the intellect is better than intuition, because I understand them as being two complementary factors, like a yin and a yang coming together to support each other. Right. So we have to be grounded with our intuition. We don't want to go into la la land and make stuff up. I mean, you can do that. I've had students do that. Right. So there's a real important part that, you know, balancing these two energies and working together is so important into having actual positive results. Right. But at the same time, we can't shut off that life. Right. Which is on the intellectual mind, when we don't let that creative flow happen.
Kim, can you, 1 minute only, can you tell us something that we should have talked about, but we haven't? So what is it that you want people to know?
Well, I would just say that intuition is something that every single person has. And if you think you don't have intuition, then no matter where you are, you can start right where you are and take little steps to develop it. And it's something that's there waiting for each and every one of us to access.
Beautiful. Kim Chesney, the author of Radical Intuition, and you can find her in kimchesney.com. I know you also have a free summit for everyone to join in about intuition. Can you share just a little bit about that?
Yeah, on my website, intuition-revolution.com, we're featuring 20 insight leaders, game designers, Hollywood producers, not your usual suspects, talking about why intuition is so important for everybody, and how we can all start to use it to live better lives.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being with us. And it was a joy to have you.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Take care. And everyone, we'll be right back.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want. You deserve it.
Well, Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I am excited to have Robert Moss with us. He's a cartographer of inner space, equally at home in Jung's psychology and shamanic journey. And the compelling stories, playful activities, and wild games he provides us with and designs to lead us to manifest a life of creative joy and abundance. And you'll learn to connect with your inner imagineer and become a scriptwriter, a director, the star of your own life movies, and choosing your own preferred genre and stepping into a bigger and a braver story. Welcome. And he is the author of Growing Big Dreams, Manifesting Your Heart's Desires Through 12 Secrets of the Imagination. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Fujian. Nice to be dreaming with you. And hey, I want to sign up for everything you just talked about. I mean, it sounds great to me. It sounds juicy, sounds full of possibility. I want to be able to go to a dream cinema, an inner cinema, anytime that I like, and be entertained and refreshed and learn that I can become the scriptwriter and director and star of my own life movies. I really want to do that. I want to learn how to go to real places in non-ordinary reality for healing and guidance and communication with wise teachers and ancestors and have a lot of fun and romance and do that without leaving home, to travel without leaving home. I want all of that too. So this guy sounds as if he might have something to offer us.
I'm positive. Now, first of all, let's define. Are we talking about the dream as dream while we're actually sleeping, or are we talking about the dream as daydreaming, or both?
We're talking about that and a lot more. We're talking about waking up. Dreaming is waking up. People think that dream and dreaming is about what happens during sleep. Well, it might be. I have great respect for the gifts of spontaneous sleep dreams, the ones we don't ask for and may not want. I mean, they're a voice of conscience. They restore our inner compass. They introduce us to inner teachers. They show us sides of ourselves, including the Jungian shadow we might have been trying to avoid. They show us the future. They show us things across space and time, all of that. But dreaming is not only about what happens during sleep. In ancient Egypt, where they did a lot of dreaming, you know, the word for dream we transliterate as reswit, R-S-W-T. It means literally an awakening. And in hieroglyphs, it's shown with a determinative at the end of the hieroglyphs of a wide open eye. So in the Egyptian mind, it's understood that in dreams you might wake up. It might start in sleep, or it might start in some other way. So I teach modes of dreaming across a broad spectrum. I teach people to work and play with their sleep dreams. I teach people to spend more attention, more time and attention, what goes on in that drifty liminal threshold space between sleep and awake, a hypnagogic zone, which is a very creative, very intuitive, very psychic region where contact with inner and transpersonal teachers is easy. I don't discount reverie or daydream. I mean, it can be interesting. I teach people to journey in the way of the shaman, with or without the shamanic drumming, to make a conscious journey to an interesting place in non-ordinary reality. I teach what I call horizontal meditation and walking meditation, when you go around in this world with your eyes wide open, all your senses open, picking up signs and symbols from the dream of life around you. So dreaming isn't just this or that. As I teach it and practice, it's a whole way of being in the world, and not only in one world, but in many worlds at the same time.
Robert, I had this amazing experience a couple of weeks ago where I went to a teacher who, her name is Sue Callahan, and I laid down and she, you know, she gave me the rattle and we called on the spirit and then, you know, with the drumming of the shamans, and I had some epiphany. It was just an amazing experience where I had this experience of images coming, you know, as I was going to different types of images and listening and hearing these words of wisdom that were coming to me and sharing with me in how to take care of myself, how to be, you know, go with my aspirations, how to not meddle in things that have nothing to do with me and really focus in what I needed to do. So it was 1 hour of what you call horizontal meditation with a lot of different imageries that were profound and a lot of emotional release that came with it. So it's an experience to have. And I know even from the Jungian psychology of dream analysis, and, you know, every single part of the dream has the messages for us, that is from our subconscious, like, to actually listen to and guides us from the inner part moving forward and kind of holding us to where we intend to be. The question that comes up for me as I was looking at your book also, which is more listening to this inner guides, which is us and giving us the inner guides, is listening to that sufficient enough to move us forward because it has all the information? Or is it for us to also come to the conscious mind and look at what is it that I want and vision it, purposely creating that dream and moving forward? Because I think these are two different processes. Can you share a bit about that?
Well, it's not either or. These are different approaches. On the first question, Rumi said it, the one who knows all is with you now closer than your jugular vein. In a sense, the life teacher, the fundamental guide, is no stranger. It is, as the Sufis say beautifully, the soul of the soul, the Gabriel of your being. It's no stranger. But it's beyond being a part of your personal subconscious, your personal unconscious. You've got to get beyond that. As Jung got beyond that, Jung didn't say that everything is a part of yourself and in a narrow sense. He said you're connected, the play of the archetypes, the play of those that some call gods or spirits or angels. You're connected. And they go beyond any definition of the self that is not vast and capacious. So one of the things to know about dreams, which every society that's valued dreaming has understood, is they connect us to something more than any conception of the ordinary self. They connect us to a wiser self. They connect us to the God, goddess we can talk to. They connect us to the spirits of nature. So that's part of it. And they take us beyond our everyday attitudes, and they help us to find what the soul or the spirit wants in life, what the larger self wants in life, as opposed to this constant clamoring of the ego for a grocery list of possessions and wish fulfillment. They take us beyond all of that. However, we can be active about this. It's not just a question of being passively poised to receive and surrender. We can grow dreams, we can build visions, and we can learn to grow a vision of life's possibilities so strong and so rich and so true that it wants to take root in the world. That's one of the things that I teach people to do. But if you're going to do that, you're going to be an active imagineer. You need to be in touch with more of yourself. You need to bring back your magical child, right? That beautiful young girl or boy who knows the magic of making things up, that might have run away in childhood because the world was cold and cruel and no one would listen, and no one would protect. We need to bring back the magical child in each of us and let their joy and their laughter and their energy play in. We need to be rooted in the earth. We need to listen to the body and its wisdom. We're setting an objective. We need to check with the body and see if it believes us. And we need to check in with the higher self, the self on a higher level. If we do that, bring those forces together, educate the little mind, the little everyday mind, then we can make wonders. We can make wonders. Then we can co-create our reality in a sense that isn't just New Age fluff. Then we can begin to do the active work of imagining a better future for ourselves and others.
You said something. You said you need to check with your body and see if it believes you. Can you share more about that?
Well, you know, everything is going to be reacted to by our bodies. I mean, and by the way, one of the secrets of life in terms of the imagination, the themes of my new book, is the body believes in images. So, you know, whatever image, thought or feeling you give your body, you're going to get a response. But if the body doesn't like your thoughts, feelings, calculations, or images, you might get a very repellent response. You might get a very rebellious response to the body. You might get indigestion. You might get other things because the body doesn't like the number you're doing on yourself from the brain and from your ordinary calculations. So I think it's very important to check that the body is in agreement. So let's say this. Let's slow down for a moment to talk about what people might want to do at this strange stage in life and these crazy times we're living in. Suppose you want to grow a dream of your life possibility, a dream in which you are fulfilling your heart's desires, let's say, fulfilling the secret wishes of your soul, which is one of the things that your dreams will show you. How do you get there? Well, you find an image of possibility. Maybe it's in your dream already. Maybe you've been somewhere really nice. Maybe you've been with your soulmate. Maybe you've been to the house you've always wanted. Maybe you've been doing the work that fulfills you. Maybe you're doing the work of your soul in a community of caring people, and you've dreamed or sensed or wanted to believe something like that. You put yourself there with your mind, and you go there with all of your senses, and you begin to develop a scene around you, which you're enjoying richly the fulfillment with something you long for. And then you check with your body. Does your body believe this? How's your body doing? Is your body just exhausted? Is it want to just go away and take a nap or go and do something else altogether? Or is your body with you on this journey? Because you want your body with you. You want your body with you. And you want your soul with you. And you want your higher self with you. The old kahunas of Hawaii said the same thing. You know, they said, you know, the middle self, the ordinary egoic self, doesn't have a clue. It's going to lead you the wrong way. To get something done in terms of vision, living the visionary life, fulfilling the vision, you've got to bring in the wisdom of the lower self, the body self, the somatic self, and join it to the knowledge of the Amakua, the high ancestral self. When they come together and educate the ordinary mind, you can do magic. You can do real magic. And I think that's basically correct.
So the first step is to begin creating a vision in your mind, or listen to the visions and the pictures that are out, that are coming from inside of you when you're looking at the idea. Some people, Robert, have an idea about what their life fulfillment looks like, and they have some visions of that are actual, that are you know, that can be manifested. That I talk to a lot of other people who like, I just don't like where I am, but I have no idea what it looks like when I am satisfied and fulfilled. I know there's something missing. I just don't know what it is. So for people who don't know what it is, how do you create the dream of their life?
Well, this is why the dreaming and the dream work is so crucial, Fujian. It's absolutely crucial. Let me tell you a personal story. You know, as New York Times best-selling thriller writer back in the 80s, making pots of money, stretched limousines, Dom Perignon, whether I wanted it or not, and I was not happy. I knew I needed to do something else, even though I'm living what looks like a dream to other people. I'm inside it, I'm not happy. So, but you know, like other courageous white men who are making a lot of money, I think I'll serve the purpose of the soul and I've collected another big check and put it in the bank, right? So I'm trying to write a book, I don't believe it. It's got a Russian theme. It's a Russian thriller. I ask for guidance. This is going to be a direct response to your question. Just wait for a second. And I have my dream. And in my dream, I'm entering a sort of really fancy banquet restaurant in Manhattan, Upper East Side kind of thing. And all everything's so beautiful. It's not silverware. It's goldware. And this best porcelain laid out for hundreds, all in my honor, you know, champagne. And the maitre d' is shaking with fear. And I say, what's the matter with you? He says, Mr. Moss, there's a problem in the kitchen. What is it? What is it? He says, the master chef does not like your menu. He's threatening to walk out. He will not cook to your menu. And I wake up understanding if I insist on the agenda of my ego, which wants to put the next check in the bank, following that plan, my creative self, my master chef, will not be on the scene. So I tore up the contract. I abandoned that project and did other things, made less money, was a lot less happy. Okay, that's an example of asking for help, of what is called dream incubation. You set an intention for your dream and you get it. You might not like it, but it might be exactly what you need. With or without intention, your dreams are going to show you what I learned from indigenous Native American tradition to call the secret wishes of your soul. Show you what on a depth level, your soul, your spirit, your greater self wants in your life. So you don't have to try and figure all this out on the level of the everyday mind. You have other sources to draw upon. And you know what? In this time, in this crazy time, we're in this lockdown time, many more people are listening to their dreams, in this sense, the night dreams, that have done so in the past. Many more people are willing, you know this too, many more people are willing to talk about them in the past. They need effective ways of talking and sharing and being guided towards action. I've invented one of those ways. It's a very simple four-step process for sharing dreams or life stories and getting non-intrusive feedback and being guided to action. Because your dreams, in this sense, are going to tell you. You don't need to worry so much about it. Just put yourself in a place where your bigger story can find you. That's an Aboriginal saying from my native Australia, Fujian. The Aborigines say, the big stories are hunting the right people to tell them or to live them. Like predators in the bush, like sharks in the water, your bigger story is looking for you. All you have to do is put yourself in a place where you're easy to find. When your big story grabs you, all these little questions fall away. You have the courage and the sense of the deeper drama, the mythic life that will actually get you through the ups and downs of everyday existence.
So how do you put yourself in a position to be found?
Well, first of all, pay attention to your dreams. You've been going through a dream drought. You're not alone. Don't beat yourself up. Don't say, I can't do this or I don't believe in it. Many people in our culture have been going through a dream drought for decades, you know, because we haven't encouraged the sharing or the acting on dreams. It hasn't been part of our daily practice. We haven't made time or room for it. Do this. Give yourself the idea you'll remember something tonight. You can set an intention or not. be ready to write something down. If you're awake in the middle of the night, lie in horizontal meditation. Just spend a little time in bed. You ran to the bathroom, fine. Spend a little time in bed just lying there. See what images come and go. You're talking about your hour of all sorts of impressions and, you know, communications coming through and someone's rattling with you. Well, this could happen any night in that threshold state between sleep and awake, which is a very creative space. At the end of the night, whether you have anything or not, write something in your journal. If you haven't been keeping a journal, start one. Write something down every day, just a feeling, just a passing impression, maybe something in the street, maybe a snatch of conversation you hear outside your apartment or your house when you first go outside in the world. Start keeping a journal with bits and pieces from the night, with bits and pieces from the day. And as you do that, you know what? Your dream producers, who I think are a cast of people who actually exist, dream producers will perk up and they'll look at you and say, well, maybe we should give this person something really good because they're listening. They're ready to record. They're ready to receive. That's one of the ways you do it. Another way you do it is you go out into the world. Maybe you can't travel the way you used to, but you've got a theme on your mind. You've got a question on which you'd like guidance. You put that theme in your mind, maybe. You step out in the world and you accept the first unusual, unexpected thing that pops up in the world around you as a message, an oracle from the world around you. It comes to you like a dream symbol, so you let it speak to you that way. Those are very simple ways of starting. Anybody can do this. This is the beauty of it. You don't get really good at it without practice, 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 but you've got a place to start anytime you choose.
Absolutely. I remember when I was taking a couple of courses about dreams, I do a lot of the dreams from the Gestalt. I learned the Jungian, but mostly from the Gestalt perspective. And I remember doing some of the dream work and nothing was showing up. Like I would wake up every morning and there's nothing showed up. And then I talked to my professor and was like, can you put a pen and a paper right beside you and just wait. And then anything that shows up, even if it's one word, like you said, just wake up in the middle of the you know, night or in the morning and just write. Even if it's one word, even if it's just the line that you're drawing, whatever it is, even if it's the shape, even if it's a feeling, just put it on. Exactly about 15 days later, it started pouring. I started doing that for, you know, 15 days. And I was like, it's not happening. It's not happening. And then started pouring. I remembered almost three dreams per night when I woke up in the morning. And it was fascinating in how when we, like you said, when we allow this to show up and we create the space for it, then the inner part of us starts producing it and giving it to you because you're open to hearing it.
Yeah, open the space and then it will come. I mean, your example is a very good teaching example, Fujian. And I'll say this further in the cause of journaling. Your journal is the most important book you will ever write. And it might be about the most important book you'll ever read. I'll put it that strongly. I've published 26 books in conventional terms so far. My journal is still the most important book I will ever write. And I go back to it. I mean, I open it at random. I see what's going on 10 years ago. And sometimes, you know what? It speaks exactly to where I am today. It gives me my personal encyclopedia of symbols. I don't need anybody else's. It's my scientific data log of experiences like precognition, seeing the future, like telepathy. It's also my database for understanding that maybe you and I right now, Fujian, everybody watching, is living in one of many parallel worlds. You have a parallel self over here who's doing something a little bit different. Science tells us that this is more likely than not, the many worlds hypothesis. It's very interesting to start thinking in human terms, in experiential terms, in life terms. But what it might mean for you if you've got another Fujian, another Robert, who's with a different partner doing different things, and maybe they could look in on that other life and bring something from it. These are things, again, you can test and verify and experiment with and draw upon through the art of keeping a dream journal. But the very first step is the one that you're talking about. You want to get your dreams, you want your dreams to get you, start a journal. It might start out with one word or a sketch or a shape. It will grow.
In 1 minute, if there's anything we haven't shared and you really want our audience to know, what would it be?
Well, there's something very huge given what we've been faced with in our lives over the last year. And it's this, you know, when you suffer a setback in life, when things seem bad, when you suffer a disappointment, and the world turns against you and everybody else, look for an opportunity. What is in your way may be your way is the old Stoic principle. There's something that's holding you up, casting you down, setting you back. What is the opportunity? There's a door that's closing. What door is opening? I find it incredibly important in life to play the game, however difficult it seems to be, of asking, what is the gift in this wound? Where is the door that might be opening when this door is closing? What do I learn from this obstacle or challenge that I can apply in order to do better? I think that's very good life guidance. One of the chapters in my book, Growing Big Dreams, one of the essential lessons for life we need to apply right now.
Thank you so much. Everyone, Robert Moss, Growing Big Dreams, Manifesting Your Heart's Desire through 12 Secrets of Imagination. You can find him in mossdreams.com. Thank you so much for being with us and allowing us to get to know you and get to know how to create the dreams of our life.
Delight to be dreaming with you, Fujian, and for you and for everybody, may you grow big dreams and may they manifest in your life.
And for all of you who are with us, listening or watching us, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, bye-bye.